sense that...
Wow, that doesn't sound like a...
No.
But anyway, they said, why on earth, you talked about NSAIDs, you talked about how they, you know, will express rebound headaches, then why on earth would you mix it with an NSAID? Like, you know, what's the deal there, right? It's Emetrex mixed with naproxen, right? So what's your answer? Does anybody have a suggestion? Does it sound odd to you guys? Well, yep. No, you're not adding caffeine, you're adding naproxen. Oh, you mean, will it increase the absorption? Is that what you're saying? No, it doesn't increase the absorption. Remember what we talked about with headaches and how we talked about, even with the early alkaloids, and we talked about vasoconstriction, right? And trying to alleviate headaches, and vasodilation often is a contributor to leading to a headache. Well, remember what inflammation, didn't we allude to inflammation as well, how inflammation is also involved in the initiation of migraines or headaches?
There's something.
really love Mrs. O'Chell, started to get hungry more frequently than every other day. She's better now because she uses several medicines, including Imitrex.
In the past, when we just took the Imitrex alone, sometimes the headache would rebound. Your headache would go away for a little while, but then it would come back.
Many patients like Amy don't get adequate relief. There are several potential reasons. Part of the reason is they may be on the wrong dose. Another reason is they're on the correct dose, but they take the drug too late into the attack. And another reason is that the drugs, as good as they are, they don't address all of the features of migraine. The medicines called triptans are widely used and very effective when taken shortly after the onset of migraine or migraine warning signs. But now the latest research found by adding to Imitrex the anti-inflammatory naproxen, patients got more relief than using Imitrex alone.
What we know with migraine is it's a disorder of the nerve, it's a disorder of the blood vessel, but there's also inflammation associated with the headache. And the triptans work on the blood vessel and on the nerve, but the ones that we have currently don't address the inflammation.
In the study, patients either got a single tablet containing both Imitrex and naproxen, 500 milligrams, or got only Imitrex or only naproxen, or a placebo with nothing in it. The combination pill containing both medicines did better at relieving headache at 2 hours, relieving sensitivity to light and loud sounds, and relieve nausea better. The combo pill also did better at sustaining the pain relief through the 24-hour period after the beginning of the migraine.
You get the initial relief of headache from the sumatriptan right away, and then the naproxen is pushed forward in time so that it lasts about 24 hours later. So we get the initial relief of the headache, and then the naproxen, by lasting longer, prevents the headache from coming back later.
Once I take it, it's gone. The headache is gone. When I take that combination, I don't see another headache maybe for another week.
I'm done. I agree.
So pretty much what I told you, but it's just to sometimes see patients talking about it. Okay. As far as the half-life here, Zomig's going to have roughly about a half-hour half-life, so it's going to be a little bit longer than Imitrex's two, more commonly two, but could possibly lead to three. And the thing with Zomig, from a metabolizing standpoint, is you actually have an active metabolite that gets released upon metabolism, and that active metabolite is significantly anywhere from two to six times more potent than the parent molecule, and so that is going to also contribute to the increased duration and half-life that we see. All right. Anything that's lipophilic is, of course, going to be metabolized, and it's metabolized through monoamine oxidase, so you're not going to recommend what? Patients on IOI inhibitors because they would increase toxicity. Okay, because they've increased the lipophilicity of this, they've also decreased the headache recurrence to roughly around 22%. So now they've pretty much cut it in half. You've gone from 46% headache recurrence to 22%. That's quite significant. And then, of course, this goes without saying with all patients, you've got to be careful who you give it to because of the higher risk category. Drug interactions. Tagamet, you guys know what this is used for? Heartburn, okay, acid reflux. This has an interaction with Zomig, and you got to make sure people are not taking this when they're taking Zomig, because you could actually, if they take this medication with Zomig, you can actually double the plasma concentrations of Zomig. Would that be good? No. So just make sure, it's another question you ask. And then I'm just giving you examples of some MAOI inhibitors, and obviously we don't want them to be on those. Okay, side effects. You see a lot of tryptan sensations. We already talked about that before. Some clinical studies have said that you want to sometimes use this cautiously in men, specifically older than 40, postmenopausal women, and patients with cardiac risk factors because they have more adverse effects to Zomig in this category. All right. The next one is narotriptan. And narotriptan is kind of known as the gentle triptan. This was the next one out on the market. And if you look what they're doing structurally, okay, we realize the differences with the transition to Zomig. Then you go back to your parent molecule, and they're looking at how they could potentially modify Imitrex's structure to come up with something else, which is very common. Pharmaceutical companies do this all the time. Once they know a structure, they go and try and figure out how to get around patents, but keep a structure relatively close so that what? Why? Because they know it works and they want to make money, right? They want to come up with their derivative. So they went back to Imitrex and they figured out, okay, well, this tertiary amine here, how about we keep the tertiary amine, but we cyclize it? I bet we could probably increase the lipophilicity by doing that. And so that's what they did here. So it was actually, they're actually using rational drug design and how they're modifying these structures. Slower onset, the onset of narotriptan is roughly between 2 to 3 hours. Reduced recurrence relative to Imitrex, you're going to see about 30% recurrence with narotriptan. And the biggest thing up to this point is, have we been able to develop a triptan that has a long duration of action? So the people that experience really long migraines, sorry, SOL up to this point, right? Well, now this one has a 5 to 7 hour duration. So this is much better for people that experience very long migraines. They've improved the bioavailability tremendously, and guess why? Because why? Well, how do they improve the bioavailability with Zomig? We'll talk about Imitrex. More lipophilic. Have they made it lipophilic with narotriptan? Yeah. So they've increased the bioavailability. All right. So 1 milligram, 2.5 milligrams, you really don't want to go beyond 5 milligrams a day. OCs, big drug interaction with narotriptan. OCs can actually significantly increase the drug concentration of this one. So, for example, if you have a female patient on OCs and they suffer from migraines, you might not want to put them on this one. but there's a lot of other alternatives.
If we have higher liquid publicity, why do we have slower onset?
Well, it depends. Like, when you get higher liquid publicity, it's going to get absorbed much faster, but it's not going to necessarily get to the site of action as fast, because there's a lot of obstacles it has to overcome to get there. And you have to think it has to also be able to bind to the receptors too. So you can't always think that those two are going to go hand in hand. All right. Pregnancy category B with this one. So you could give it to a pregnant female. And the biggest thing with this up to this point is this is the first one we've basically had that has the longer duration of action. So this is really big. The second thing I want to point out is, remember at the very beginning when we talked about triptans and I said, well, they are metabolized through monoamine oxidase, so be careful if someone's on an MAOI inhibitor. But I remember when I said except for one, this is the one. Narotriptan primarily is metabolized through P450 enzymes, and so you could potentially have somebody, if they needed to stay on their MAOI inhibitor, and put them on narotriptan, and it would be okay. So that's actually a huge advantage to the triptans, because all the rest of them, you can't do that. All right, we already know what the disadvantages are. We already know. Actually, this is interesting, because I told you all these people, most of these people are in high risk. But if you had to just say, well, if I have patients that have hypertension, diabetes, heart disease, they're obese, they're smokers, if you had to pick the two most important people not to give these to, what would you choose? Hypertension and heart disease, right. So, I mean, it doesn't mean that it's safe to give to obese people or diabetics. It's just, we're talking about you have to pick the worst here. All right, rizatriptan. Maxalt came out after nirotriptan. Structurally wise, they're going back to Imitrex. They're keeping the endo and the alkylamine here. They're modifying the structure because it's this part of the structure that leads to the lack of lipophilicity with this molecule. And remember, that's the drawback for Imitrex. So they're adding a heterocyclic ring here. And so this is what Merck did, and this is what they came up with. So about a 2-hour headache relief. It's very selective. You can take it in 5 or 10 milligram doses. You can't take it more than, I think it's 30 milligrams in a day. So if you're taking 10 milligrams, you can only repeat your dose 3 times. The biggest thing with Riza is they have oral tablets, but the biggest thing with this one is the rapidly dissolving tablets. That's what they marketed it for, because basically they're saying, well, you don't need water to take our drug. You can just put it on your tongue and it'll dissolve and it'll start to work. And so you can go right back to work, or if you don't have water around, like, you can still take our drug. The problem with that, though, is that when you actually look at the onset of those rapidly dissolving tablets, the onset's slower than if you were to just take it orally, for example. So, I mean, yeah, it's convenient, but it's about what you want as well. Metabolized monoamine oxidase, and recurrence is actually pretty comparable, similar to SUMA, so you gotta be cautious of this one. But it's going to have about a 2-hour half-life. Bioavailability, which they have significantly improved. And pregnancy category C. So what does that mean to you? Can you give someone a drug that's a pregnancy category C? Yeah. Okay. Be careful. We've already talked about what you want to do with this. Triptan sensations. Elotriptan or Relpax. Oh, actually, there's supposed to be a nitrogen here in the structure. This is supposed to be the endo. They didn't just all of a sudden say we don't need that nitrogen. You still need the endo here. So this is a drug that Pfizer came up with, and it's pretty effective. It's very comparable to the other triptans. Recurrence rates are relatively low. It's actually similar to Zomig. You're going to see roughly around 20% headache recurrence with this one. It has an onset very similar to Imitrex, so roughly closer. You're pushing more towards the 30-minute onset with this one. And but anything that has an onset between 15 and 30 minutes, you could technically give for acute migraines. So you could technically give this one for that one. And it's one. It's going to have about a 4-hour half-life. And very well tolerated. Some people do very well on it. Acts like the other triptans. Okay, now we're going to get into Proba. Remember last time I talked to you guys, we mentioned the whole notion of menstrual migraines, right? All right, Proba is the only triptan that's FDA approved to be effective for menstrual migraines. Okay, so remember when I was talking to you about my neighbor down the street? This is the one I recommended as number one. And remember when I told you that physician was a complete idiot? He didn't even know what Proba was. What a moron, you know? I mean, you should know what this is, especially when she's a classic case of menstrual migraines. Nonetheless, you still see the indole ring. You might think they're modifying the pharmacophore because look at what they've done with this ring. Adding rings adjacent to a pharmacophore is not necessarily substituting on the pharmacophore. They can get away with this. And actually, by just adding this one ring here, this Proba, one of Proba's biggest claim to fame now, is up to this point, what's the longest half-life that we've probably had for anyone that we talked about? About 7 hours. Guess what? This one's 26 and a half hours. So this is by far and away the longest half-life that we have available. Very effective. Biggest problem with Proba is that a lot of insurances don't want to pay for it, which is nothing new, because when we talk about insomnia, for example, when we get to that topic, we'll talk about how great of a drug Rosarum is. Well, insurances don't really want to pay for that either. Insurances don't look at what's best for the patients necessarily. So, for example, her insurance didn't really want to pay for it. They would pay for Imitrex, which I think is cost more than Proba, but they didn't really want to pay for Proba. And so I'm like, I said, call the company then. And she has pretty decent insurance. And I'm like, okay, so she called the company and they just sent her some free doses and stuff. So I don't know, but she took this drug. I said, if this drug doesn't help you, then, you know, we can go back to the drawing board and I can give you some other suggestions, but this is my best suggestion. She comes back and she's like, oh my goodness, I would never go, I don't care how much this drug is, I would pay for it. Because she's like, I would never go back to living the life that I once was. She's like, this is a miracle. pretty good bioavailability, 30%. I mean, not the best that we've seen, but decent. Very selective. A lot of triptans have very similar things, but like I said, very, very long half-life. This is due solely because of they increase the lipophilicity so much. And the biggest drawback, though, if you counsel somebody on Proba, is this is a great drug for people that experience very long migraines. The problem is remember when I said you got to tailor your drugs to your patients, find out what your patient wants? You're going to have to talk them in or make them realize that this drug is going to take them, it's going to take a little while to go into effect. But once it does, they're going to be completely covered for a very long time. So you're not going to be able, this is not going to be one that you would want to give for people that want immediate relief from their migraine. Because it's going to take a little while to get into their system. But overall, very well tolerated.
How long does it take?
Well, it could take about an hour to an hour and a half, potentially, to go into effect. It depends on the person, depends on their dynamics, what other drugs they're taking, and kind of like what their body fat is. But I would say roughly about an hour to an hour and a half. But if you make them realize that, you know, sorry, it's going to take a little bit longer, but oh my goodness, you're not going to have to redose, you're not going to have to go through that like roller coaster of pain and stuff, they will love this drug. The problem a little bit with Proba is, depends on the dose that you take it, it can sometimes make you feel a little exhausted. But, you know, I'd rather feel exhausted than suffer through the pain that I would have to experience. Pretty well tolerated, pregnancy category C, and has the lowest headache recurrence of all the drugs. So that's a good thing. She actually experienced a lot of headache recurrences because she was on Vicodin for forever, and shame on her physician for continually writing the script for Vicodin. I mean, what a moron. Just an idiot. So he should have known that that's going to contribute to the rebound headaches, so she's more susceptible to rebounds. So going on Proba, she's never experienced rebounds since then, so that's good.
What percentage would you say you see with Proba of rebound?
For headache recurrence? Well, the research, when you read the clinical trials and what physicians and stuff are experiencing in their patients, they say that only between 10 or 15% really experience a headache recurrence with Proba. And they're not completely confident that it's just because of the Proba. They said that they believe that they're taking other products as well that could be contributing, so it could contribute to 5%, 3%, I don't know. But still, by far the lowest that you would see with all your other drugs. All right, we already know who not to give this to. It's going to be cautious of. We already know about the triptan sensations. All right, let's talk about Axert now. This is kind of the last one that came out. Very similar and comparable to Imitrex when you look at the structure. Pregnancy category C has the highest oral bioavailability of all the triptans that we've seen so far, 80%. That's great. It's very well tolerated. Some people do very well on it. 12.5, 6.25 milligrams. I mean, you're not going to want to take more than two doses, though, per day. Half-life's about 3 hours, so it's not going to be the greatest for long migraines. Side effects are still the triptan sensations. These prices are heavily off because it's been a couple years since I should have updated it. I just haven't had time to get around to it. But last time I checked, Proba was actually pretty cheap. I don't know what the price is now. Who works in a pharmacy and knows their price as well?
Proba is probably the insurance is more covered than any of the other ones because it's so much cheaper.
Right. Yeah. At one time, Proba was cheap. Now it's very expensive. But still, you got to assess your patients. Like Topamax, we'll talk about Topamax. We'll talk about the anti-epileptics. We'll talk about what's the problem with that. But, you know, Imitrex is not going to be very good for people that have, at all, for people that have menstrual migraines. And neither is Topamax either. But it's hard because you sometimes have to try and get through the loopholes, and insurance companies it's a headache. I mean, it's horrible. They're not really looking to treat the patients adequately. It's all about money. All right, Gelstat. Have you guys ever seen this product? Okay. So this is a mixture of feverfew and ginger. Now, why might some people think you might get relief from a product like this? Well, what is it made of? Did you talk about that? No, what do you say about that? Does everybody get relief if they want to supplement with feverfew? No, of course not, right? But some people do, okay? So, and then what about ginger? What's the surprising thing here? Yeah, it helps some people with nausea, right, okay? And nausea is oftentimes associated with migraines, except it doesn't help everybody. Like, I get seasick, and I took the ferry over to, Milwaukee? Yeah, Wisconsin. And they're like, oh, it's not going to be bad at all. It's so, like, you know, smooth sailing, like, you're just going to be there in a heartbeat, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, right. I remember being in San Francisco one time going around Alcatraz, and it was the worst day of my life. Anyway, in a boat. And so I've been there, and it was my own fault because I didn't take care of me, because I listened to Moron tell me that, no, it's smooth sailing, you're not going to have any issues. And so, sure enough, you know, I get sick, and they're like, let me go get you this ginger pop or ginger soda. Has anybody taken that ferry before? Yeah, have you seen that ginger stuff? It doesn't work. But it works for some people, I guess. So, you know, that's the rationale behind feverfew and ginger. So more for our herbal people that would like to try products that do that. The thing with Gelstat, though, is you do not want, if someone's going to supplement to their migraines. How might you counsel them if they're taking it? Like, meaning, and maybe they want to get off of it. Can they just stop taking it abruptly? No, because what does it have in it? Feverfew. And if you're taking Feverfew, what do you recommend? They slowly titrate off. Because otherwise, what could it bring on? There you go. You guys are good. All right, teaching you something. All right. Bioisosterism. So this is what we're going to talk about now, because when you look back at the structures, there's definitely rational drug design going on with the structure modifications. And so there's some techniques that we use in industry that can improve upon these side effects, because when you come up with a drug, that's great. You know, you're always going to have side effects, and if you're another drug company, you're always going to want to improve upon those side effects because you want people buying that drug and you want to have a better drug. So bioisosteres are just groups that have chemical or physical similarities, but they you can basically choose it knowing a rough idea of what you're going to do. So for example, with the triptans, we're trying to improve lipophilicity, right? We're trying to decrease our headache recurrence. We're trying to increase bioavailability. So if you have a molecule that has, for example, an amine on it, might you want to replace it with something that, like, for example, has a hydroxy on it? And remember what we're trying to do here with the triptans. Would this be a rational bioisoster replacement? No, that'd be stupid, right? Because they're both polar. You want to try and add something that's lipophilic, right? So you might want to add a methyl. Depends on how big your pocket is, if you know your active site and what you're actually designing. But we want to improve lipophilicity. However, when we make that replacement, we don't want to lose activity, okay? So they, throughout the years, industry has come out with this list of bioisosteres, like similar groups you can pluck out and put into a molecule that generally you won't lose the potency, but it will have, it'll cause a different effect in some of the side effects. So you could improve upon some things. You can't, I mean, I'm going to tell you this right now. You can't say, okay, I'm going to take the amine out and put a methyl in there, and now they're not going to have any nausea issues. You're not going to be able to predict that. You have to test it to figure out. Because, I mean, we don't know that kind of stuff. But bioisosterism is just a rational drug design or lead modification approach to try and improving upon drug molecules. So, like, for example, when we're talking about the triptans, this is our pharmacophore, okay, our indole. We don't want to mess with the indole. And we know specifically where on the indole we want to primarily alkylate or substitute. So we have what are known as classical isosteres and non-classical isosteres. You can think about this as classical are your first-line options, if you will, that you would kind of choose from to try and make some modifications. Non-classical ones are not always going to be as reliable and more of like your second-line chances or second options you would kind of move into. All right, these are some examples of classical isosteres. You shouldn't be going home tonight and memorizing these categories. That's stupid, okay? I'm just telling you. Like, you have better use of your time. But you're going to see that they all fall into categories, okay? And so, like, you have your methyl, your amine, your hydroxy, etc. Okay, that's what this is saying, is that you can interchange any one of these groups here, and you won't mess, I mean, nothing's an absolute, but you know, 9 out of 10 won't mess with the potency. But changing these groups will allow you to improve upon some things you're trying to get at. So for example, in your active site, maybe you need something right in this one particular spot that could hit your gym bond, okay, with your protein. Well, then you have some options available that you could choose. Maybe you need to make it more lipophilic, so you might want to put, for example, a methyl or a fluorine in there. So you have options. So each one of these are in its own little category, and so you can interchange these to actually see the effects. And oftentimes, you might have to try many different replacements to see which is better. That's why, partly, research takes so long. All right, some examples of non-classical isosteres. I mean, there's lots of examples here. And again, the These are ones that they've realized throughout the course of trial and error. And so, generally speaking, when you run into a problem and you're like, I really need to improve upon this if I'm going to be able to market and spend all this money to bring it to market. So if we don't improve upon, for example, the local publicity, or if we don't get this headache recurrence down, no one's going to want to buy our drug anyway because there's so many other drugs available that are pretty comparable. We have to have something that sets our drug apart. So that's why they will continue to tinker with molecules. This is kind of a good practice problem. It's pretty generic, and it just asks you to make some bioisosteric replacements to the molecule. And you can take it a step further, and you can say, okay, well, you want to make your compound more lipophilic. What are some bioisosteric replacements you could make to this molecule and where? And just use your charts and figure out how you would do that. It's pretty simple. Obviously, if you're trying to make it more lipophilic, you're not going to add something that's hydrophilic. Okay? You might take away some of the things that are hydrophilic. This is a pretty easy case study. You could, I don't put a lot of things in here. It's pretty straightforward. And you guys should be able to get this in a millisecond because you guys have been paying attention. So this says you have a 42-year-old patient experiencing cluster migraines that last around 15 hours. Relatively healthy, also taking feverfew, multivitamins, and Varplan. What medication or medications plural would be the best selection for this patient and why? So, what are your thoughts? Well, let's talk about what we talked about with clusters, right? What drugs do we have available that are useful? And this is a good point to actually point out to you, or trying to point out to you, this is where you got to know your drugs, okay? You want to think, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Go back and really know your drugs. Because you should know, like at the top of your head, what's good for cluster. You should know what's good for Meister Myers. You should know what are the fast-acting ones, what are the longest-acting ones or longer-acting ones. So you should really learn your drugs because then that makes this kind of stuff very, very easy. And realistically, this is what someone's going to ask you, okay? They're not going to come up to you. I'm just being honest. They're not going to come up to you and say, okay, pharmacist, this is my problem. Is it my antidepressants? Is it my triptans? Is it, like, they're not going to say that. They're going to say, listen, this is my problem. This is what I'm taking. What do you suggest? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. Okay? You've got to start using your thinking skills, your rational deduction. You've got to use your higher level thinking skills to be able to do this. So if you don't practice that, you know, beforehand and start thinking this way, then how on earth are you ever going to be able to do it when you're out of practice, okay? So this is the way I like to have your guys' brains thinking, okay? Why? How? What would I recommend to my patient? Why does this happen? Why do I say don't take it to give it to a pregnant female? Remember we alluded to this when we took drug action, right? And I told you to always ask yourself why and how, and why would you never take acetaminophen if you're going to drink alcohol, and blah, blah, blah. You don't just tell people that, right? Because they're going to be like, yeah, whatever. You know, you tell them, and you tell them why. Because then they'll perk up and pay attention, right? All right, going back to this example. So what do you have to treat clusters? What do we have in our bag of tricks? Yep.
Oh, like
Capricot's useful for clusters. Dihydroergotamine or Migranol is good for clusters. And are both of those okay if someone was on an MAOI inhibitor? Because how are the ergots primarily metabolized? Yeah, your P450s. You're right, Jason. Okay, so what other drugs do we have available for clusters outside of those two? Emetrex IV, and could they take that? No, okay. So what would your recommendation be? What would your first recommendation be?
Well,
do you think you would recommend feverfew with Migranol? No. So what are you going to recommend?
Taper
them off. Get them off the fever queue, right? And then you're going to recommend they take what? Well, we talked about two, right, that you could potentially use. Which one are you going to choose as the pharmacist? What do you think? You both have the capacity to cure cluster migraines? Yeah? Which one do you think is best that we talked about? Migranol. Yep, that's best. So I would recommend that one. All right, do you have any recommendations concerning this patient's chart? We already talked about that, right? Because we're going to take them off what? There you go. Are there any supplements you may want to consider recommending for this patient? So you need counsel. How would you tell them? What supplements might you take? They might help them. Magnesium, right? Because it's low before and after migraine, right? Omega-3s, right? Because that's helpful with inflammatory diseases, which inflammation is big with migraines. Did you have a question?
Yeah. For less than 15 hours, and Myrcol is only good for 3 hours, and you dose it every time.
You're going to have to redose it for the clusters. Typically, what happens with clusters is that you don't have the actual cluster lasting for 15 hours. Generally, what happens, and this is usually assumed, is that they suffer from a migraine for 15 hours, but there are periods in that 15 hours that they're experiencing clusters. So if you can get that cluster under control with the drug in the very beginning, a lot of times the cluster won't come back. If it does come back, then you redose it. Does that make sense? Generally won't last for 15 straight hours, though.
Are you saying that the Migranol is better than the Petragon because it has a faster onset?
Yes. With clusters, you want something that has a very, very fast onset, and you're going to have more relief with Migranol, generally speaking, than Capricot. Capricot does have effectiveness with clusters, but it won't come close to being as effective as Migranol, okay? So a lot of times, people will think, they won't even think about ergot alkaloids, okay? Like, I get you guys to think about them because there's still a significant population of migraine sufferers out there that are on them, and they won't switch because they have good relief with them. You know, they probably could go on a triptan. They probably could get relief, you know, from their migraines with them, but they already know what works or what they're taking is working for them, so they really don't have a lot of reasons to want to switch. And as long as they're not experiencing a lot of side effects with their ergot derivative, really there's no incentive for them to want to switch. From an insurance standpoint, though, or people that don't have insurance, how would you counsel them differently than making the wonderful world assumption that everybody has the best insurance and they suffer from clusters? Yeah, because most of your ergot alkaloids are very cheap. But you're right, Capricot cheap. Migranol is not that expensive. And so you might have, for example, most of the time with clusters, your number one choice for physicians is going to want to be IV Imitrex. But it's not necessarily going to be the best. Well, now it's going to be relatively cheap. It used to not be cheap at all because it wasn't generic. But it might be more pricey for some people, so you might want to try another option. But if it's generic, it's not that big of a deal. But you might want to always think about that because insurance issues are always a big deal. And especially if someone's going to pay out of pocket or they might not have the adequate coverage, you might want to think a little bit differently. So you always have to think that way, unfortunately. That's why you don't have Rosarum being dispensed when it's a great drug and you don't hold it to it. I won't get on my soapbox. Anyway, I'm going to let you out early today. Have a good